Hello, everyone, and welcome to Oh, a Podcast, the podcast about playing games and making games, brought to you by Oorock Studios. I'm Paul Franzen, the head boy of Oorock.
I'm Michael Gray, the head author of Oorock.
It sounded like you were about to say something else there.
Oh, no, I don't know. I've...
I heard a slight intake of breath after head author, and I was waiting for it.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I need to fix my microphone settings.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So how are we doing? How are we doing this month, Michael?
I'm kind of sleepy. How are you doing?
I'm pretty sore.
Ouch. Were you, like, running a marathon or something?
No, but I had my hockey class yesterday morning.
Oh.
I guess I haven't really talked about that much on the podcast. I've been taking, every Sunday morning, adult beginners ice hockey lessons, and the way they sort of sell it on the website, they don't use these words exactly, but it's essentially ice hockey for people who have absolutely no business being on the ice or playing hockey, which is pretty much made for me. But yeah, yesterday morning was the first day we actually started playing scrimmages, you know, half the class versus the other half. Mm-hmm. And I fell down more times than I have in every other lesson combined so far. It's like any time the puck or any other player or the referee or a coach got anywhere near me, I just fell right on my butt every single time.
I hope you're not the goalie.
No. Yeah. It's interesting because I had rarely been falling down before, but the drills they had us doing previously, like, it was rare that I would be that close to another player. But now, like, we're all kind of bunching up around the puck, which I don't know if that's what any of us are supposed to be doing. But, like, I keep finding myself trying to maneuver not to smash into somebody. And when I do, like, a little quick turn to try to avoid hitting someone or, you know, even to try... dare I say, try to get to the puck, whenever I try to do a little quick turn, I just fall right down immediately.
Yeah, something I've noticed, a similar situation seems to happen with, like, preschool and kindergarten soccer, where it's all 12 or 10 to 12 players, however many are in soccer, will all be chasing the ball around. They won't yes. be spread out, so it's impossible for somebody to, like, pass to one of their teammates, because everybody's all in the same spot.
That's what we do. Yeah, I would say preschool kindergarten is about the level that most of us are at. Well, it's confusing because I missed a week because I tested positive for COVID. So I don't know if this is because I missed a week or it just never came up. But there has not been a point where the coach explains what the different positions are. So I just kind of skate on the ice and ask them to point me where I'm supposed to go. So I have no concept of, all right, I'm the left wing. I don't know what that means in terms of where I am supposed to be at any given time. Or I am a defenseman. What does that mean? I don't know. I guess I'm supposed to stop the other team from getting the puck. But beyond that, who can say?
I mean, I know.
Yeah, but, I guess you can say.
Yeah. Left wing just means you're on the left-hand side if you're facing towards the enemy's goal. So you'll be running up the left, and presumably there'll be somebody running up the right-hand side as well. But I don't think you guys are at the level where you can hit the... Are you at the level where you can slam the puck so hard it, like, goes away all the way around the net and up the other side?
Oh, wait, like a wraparound?
Yeah, is that the term for it?
That's a thing where, like, you're to the, like, the side of the net and you're trying to, like, shoot it, like, so it slides behind the net to the other side to get to a different person.
We were learning about that a few weeks ago.
We were learning about that. And see, that was where one of my issues with turning came up, because I would be great. I'm great at receiving the puck. But then there's the part where I have to turn around and try to skate it toward, I guess they use that word, not scoot, toward the enemy's net, as you put it. But I can't turn very fast. just kind of slowly moving in a circle to try to turn around to get to the other side. It's just, it is, I'm sure, some of the world's worst hockey that anyone has ever witnessed, but it's a ton of fun. I'm really glad I signed up for it.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that, like, I had sort of wanted to do since I was a little kid, but never got the chance to when I was little, and then didn't realize until the last few years that there are programs like this that exist that teach people how to teach grown-ups how to play. I will say one disadvantage I have over everyone else, it seems, is that I don't watch hockey. I don't really like watching sports all that much. I find them very boring. So this is perhaps where some of my confusion about what the different roles are supposed to be doing is coming from, because I don't know any of the rules of hockey or what any of the players do, except from what I've learned from the Mighty Ducks.
I'm sure it's like one of those things like basketball where there are multiple different plays and stuff. Like I've heard of like man-on-man defense as opposed to zone defense being a thing. I don't know. Yeah. There must be some complication, because whenever, like in any sport really, whenever they go to timeout, everybody goes to the coach and the coach is like showing some sort of play to them. It's like, there has to be more than two plays, right?
Well, our guy has like a whiteboard that's like in the shape of a hockey rink, and he's like, all right, drawing letters that indicate, that represent different players, and kind of pointing lines like, you're supposed to go here. But I don't know, I think I got lost because you would do that at the beginning of the lesson, and then I would forget what it was by the time we would get to the part where I would have to do that. I think what really throws me off, too, is that they had us changing positions quite a bit, so we learn all the different positions. I feel like if I stuck to one position, I could, like, memorize what that position is supposed to be doing. Like, if I know I'm always going to be left wing, I could go home and watch a bunch of YouTube tutorials about what the left wing does and where they are supposed to be at most of the time. And I feel like that would help me tremendously. But if I'm switching a lot like I have been, I think it's sort of helped me to, it's hard for me to keep in mind what I'm supposed to be doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I guess another question, if anybody's left-handed, I think the left-handed people need to be left wing and left defense naturally. But I don't think teams have an equal balance of left-handers and right-handers. I don't think that's the case.
So that's why I have been gravitating specifically toward the left, because I'm right-handed, but I bat lefty and golf lefty, so I've been kind of hockeying lefty as well, because that's what feels natural to me. So that part I did figure out, so I've been trying to stay toward the left where I can.
All right. Well, then that's good.
Yes, I figured that much out. I also haven't, I think we're on like our 9th or 10th lesson. I haven't quite figured out how to stop yet either, in addition to not knowing how to turn. So I'm still working on that part.
Oh, yeah. One of the ways to stop is you turn. A very sharp turn will stop.
Yeah, see?
Sort of like, I mean, that's true with cars, too. A great way to get your... you don't want your car to tip over, though. That's why nobody recommends it. But it works. And now I'm going to make you feel like you're just going to fall over every time you try to stop. Oh, no.
That's literally what was happening. It's so, like, I was having no trouble staying on 2 feet for the last, like, 2 months or whatever. But just yesterday, I think I fell down like over a dozen times. It was rough.
Well, there has to be a way to stop on like roller skates and roller blades, because they don't do the sideways stop that hockey players do, because they have different like shoes.
Yeah, I was starting to figure it out by like kind of making a T shape with my feet. Like my left foot would stay straight and my right foot would kind of drop back a little and turn to the side, and that would create a bit of friction that way. Like, that was making sense to me. Like, the hockey skate where you just kind of, like you said, like, you quickly turn and it sprays ice everywhere. I can't figure out how to do that at all. And I've also run into the problem where I think part of the reason I fall down is because, like, I try to do something like that where, like, okay, I know this is how you're supposed to stop, so this is what I'm going to try to do. And then I actually do start to stop, and then I like it freaks me out because it works, and then I fall over. Like, because I'm trying to stop, but I'm simultaneously not expecting to stop, and then disaster occurs.
Yeah, I'm looking up here. There's something called the T-stop, where you try to have your feet be parallel, like at a 90-degree angle. That seems complicated.
That's the one I've had the most success with so far.
It does look like it'd be easier because you just plant your back foot straight, right? And you only move your front foot.
Yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to the slower spin around stop. Okay.
Yeah. So that's why I'm sore. Why are you sleepy?
Oh, I was up late for the past several days. I've been traveling, so.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Cool. Where were you going?
The San Francisco area.
Cool. Did you have a fun time?
Suppose I did. I don't think I did anything video game related there. Or hockey related. Oh no, I didn't.
Yeah, my hockey was not particularly video game related, although I have played a significant amount of hockey games in my time. NHL 94, Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey, ice hockey on the NES, all classic games.
Isn't it the case now that they just have like one hockey series that makes a new game every year or something?
I think so. It's just, I think it's the same series that I was playing on Super Nintendo. It's just NHL, insert year here.
Yeah, that looks like it. Like NHL 22, mm-hmm. NHL 23. That just makes it seem like it's the 23rd game in the series, though. Yeah, no, it's just EA Sports. They make a new hockey game every year. That's it. You're right.
Mm.
I think those are the guys that make that Madden game every year, right?
I think they make most of the sports games, yeah.
FIFA, NBA, Live, and then Madden. Okay.
Yeah, they got all of them.
Well, they found their...
They probably do the Quidditch game, too.
They found their niche. Wasn't there a Quidditch video game, though? Came out in, like, 2001?
There was. I don't think... Yeah, exactly. It was, what, GameCube, PS2. I don't think there's been a new one since then. It wasn't very good. Because it is an impossible sport that doesn't make any sense.
2003 action game. Yeah, made by EA and someone else.
Oh my god, it actually was.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes.
Perfect. It's really funny. They have all of the real and imaginary sports taken care of.
That's great. That's the thing people complain about with Quidditch. It's like, it makes no sense that if you catch the ball last, you get 150 points, and so you're basically guaranteed a win all the time.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter what anybody but the seeker does, right? Like,
yeah.
You have to be up by 160 points or whatever for it to matter.
I just don't know how you'd do that. I guess that'd have to be like a multiplayer game. Aren't there like 7 players per side?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember how it worked in the PS2, GameCube, whatever game. I think it was like you just play as whoever the people are that put the ball in the hoop. I think you just play as that character for a certain amount of time, and then you eventually just switch over to the seeker and grab the golden snitch. Like, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not even sure if it was multiplayer. I guess it could have been two player.
I saw it was weird when they made a GameCube, you know, like a GameCube, PlayStation, Xbox of a game, and then also a Game Boy Advance, because, I mean, I can understand having something on the PlayStation and the Xbox, they're similar enough, but to have a game on the Game Boy Advance, it basically has to be a completely different game.
Yeah.
Because GBA can't really handle the 3D stuff.
Does that mean there was a Quidditch game on Game Boy Advance? Because maybe that was the good one.
I know there were like 2 Harry Potter games on Game Boy.
Oh, there it is.
That were on Game Boy Advance and like Game Boy Color. I always thought that was
according to Amazon, the GBA cut of Quidditch World Cup is much better.
Wow.
But speaking of video games, what sort of video game work have you been up to this past month?
Oh, sorry. I got distracted with Quidditch. I did play the 1997 Goosebumps video game, Goosebumps Attack of the Mutant, which was
okay. An
interesting game. There were a little bit of adventure game elements, but not too much. So something that older adventure games have is like a control issue. So I believe like the control button is interact with an item, and the space bar is use an item. And those things are just way too similar. What? I would never know which one to press. And so every single time it felt like I just had a 50-50 success rate when it came to actually using items for the game.
Why isn't it just pointing and clicking on stuff?
It's one of those games. I don't know what is like. It looks like the Super Nintendo games, which are like Doom or whatever, where it's like you're going through a 3D hallway. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's like from first person perspective.
Yeah.
And so you're moving with the arrow keys, I guess, and then control and spacebar how you interact with stuff.
Yep. And I'm not sure if, I don't know, are there any point-and-click adventure games that have that style?
There's games where it's like you're using a controller and you're moving around with the controller and then walking up to things and pushing buttons to interact with them.
I guess, yeah.
I haven't seen it with keyboard control specifically. Like Walking Dead and those kind of games, right? But that's not first person, but you're still moving around with the joypad, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so that was, it was an interesting game, but it was also, like, the adventure game puzzles were not very, like, difficult. Like, the first one you do is you're being attacked by an evil alien, and the only item on this floor is a hammer, so you have to use the hammer on the alien to just squash it. It's like, that's pretty easy to solve that particular puzzle.
Yeah, well, when all you got is a hammer, I guess every problem looks like an alien.
Yeah, yeah. And let's see, you use the key on the door. That's another puzzle that's easy enough, I suppose. Yeah. What about you? Did you play any interesting games last month?
No, I'm still kind of working on Live Alive, Live Alive. Again, I've had a few months now, I still haven't learned how to pronounce the name of the game. I'm currently doing the future sci-fi storyline where I'm playing as a robot that's in the shape of a sphere and its name is Cube. And it's not a good level because you don't do anything. There's no puzzles to solve. It's literally just like go into a room, talk to the characters, and then figure out what room you're supposed to go in next. There usually isn't any sort of direction or indication of what room. So it's literally just like wandering around in every single room and hoping it's the one that it happens next in the story to progress the plot. I gave up pretty quickly on trying to figure it out on my own. I'm just reading an FAQ, a walkthrough on game FAQs to tell me what to do. It has not been the most exciting one. The one I did before, though, the cowboy-themed pathway, that was a lot of fun, because that had this big segment where there's a gang of evil bandits coming into town, and the way you fight them off, it has, like, this wild Home Alone thing going on, where you get a set amount of in-game time, like 10 minutes in-game, to go to every building, everywhere you can in the town, and collect every item you can find that could possibly be used as a trap. And then you have the villagers set traps all over the town, and the more traps you set, the fewer enemies you have to actually fight in the climactic battle. And I thought that was pretty entertaining. I haven't seen anything like that in an RPG before. It was stuff like, I mean, the traps were really silly, like, you pick up a pile of horse dung and then place it near the entrance, and then one of the bandits steps in it. Or, you put a poster of a sexy lady on the wall, and one of the bandits sees it and is so distracted that they never make it to the combat. Stuff like that.
Feels like a LucasArts, like, joke solution.
It does. But that was the weird thing, is that, like, you collect the items, but you don't actually set the traps. You give them to other people to run off and set the traps for you. So you don't actually get, like, the puzzle-solving element. You only get, like, the almost hidden object-esque run around and grab all of the items but then someone else gets to, I guess, solve the puzzles for you. I think if I were doing the game, I would have had you collect the items and then place them as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm good at that or not. I know I was playing like the Humongous Entertainment games. It seemed to be... They seemed to make an effort to make it obvious what item in the background was an item you could pick up, whether it was like colored differently or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, that's just a funny item in the background that the background people added. But yeah, it's always the worst when you're playing an adventure game and you miss an item which was just lying out there in the open. You just didn't know that it was an item you could click on.
Yeah, I think that's why all the, or not all, but most modern adventure games now, they let you, it's usually the space bar. You can hold down the space bar and it'll show you everything in a room you can interact with to make sure you don't miss anything and avoid pixel hunting.
Yeah. I've seen it. I haven't played that many adventure games, but yeah, I've seen it in multiple ones. Well, yeah. I checked on the internet. The internet, one of the recommended searches was, how do you pronounce Live Alive? And Live Alive...
Oh, what do you got?
Live Alive, 57%, and Live Alive, 31%. So the majority say Live Alive.
Live Alive, okay. Let's see if I can remember that for next month when I tell you about the climactic ending to the game.
And no...
I just... Michael, I just picked up a pen so I could write down the pronunciation, and I just wrote down the words Live Alive.
That will help a lot, yes.
That is not going to help. Oh, I'm losing it.
Apparently the least popular pronunciation is Live Live. So,
yeah, okay. I guess what's confusing about Live Alive, like, it's not spelled like the word alive, right? It's L-I-V-E space A space L-I-V-E.
Yeah, that's weird. It's pronounced differently in the original language.
Very confusing. Oh, I have, to change topics a little bit, I have an update about our movie theater. They do have the kiosks. I know you, Michael, all of our listeners, it's been burning in their minds whether my movie theater has the kiosks where you can buy movie tickets from, and ours still does, two of them right outside the front doors of the theater.
That's good. So you can get movie tickets without having to talk to somebody or paying the extra fee on your phone.
Exactly. Exactly. Save my $2 and, yeah, not have to talk to somebody. We went to see the Dungeons and Dragons movie over the weekend that we talked about a little last month.
How did you like it? Was it very video gamey?
It was fine. I think Chris Pine is very boring, extremely miscast in this role. I don't know that I haven't seen anyone else say that, so it might just be a me thing, but I just thought he was like the most boring person they could have possibly gotten to play a bard. A bard being a character that is defined almost solely by the charisma trait in Dungeons and Dragons. He was the least charismatic person in the entire film, if not in all of Hollywood. But other than that, I thought a lot of the dialogue felt very first drafty. Like, a lot of it felt like they wrote the first line of a quip into an AI generator and let the AI generator say what the punchline was. Like, it was just so very generic to me. Like, I could feel myself, like, I caught myself a few times mouthing the dialogue of the movie along with it, despite the fact that I had never seen this movie before in my life. Like, it was just that sort of level of obvious and predictable, but I don't know. So it wasn't my favorite movie. I know a lot of people really enjoyed it, so I think it's a me problem, not a movie problem.
I guess I've heard that with other movies. It's like the characters are only saying something so they can repeat it later on as a cool action catchphrase, that sort of quip setting deal. I guess that's particularly prone to movies like that where you've got like 10 characters, and so each character's, I guess, limited into necessarily by how much screen time they have, and so it's more likely for them just to talk in quips if you've only got three lines.
Yeah. And kind of on a similar line, like, there was there was a character who's like their subplot was at the beginning of the movie, they explicitly told us that I'm not self-confident. Like he literally said those words. Like he was all but saying, my character flaw is that I have no confidence in myself. Like very, very tell not show. And then by the end of the movie, it was like, I was able to succeed because I am now confident in myself. It's like, what are we doing? Like,
That's a character arc. I feel like... he grows as a person.
But that's like, that's writing 101 though, is you show, not tell. Like, I'm saying he was literally saying these words.
Yeah. Oh. I feel like that might be a thing more in, maybe that's more of a thing in Dungeons and Dragons to, like, tell, announce to everybody what your personality or what your character is going to be like. So maybe that's what they were going for, but I don't know.
I get that. That would be a generous way to look at it, is that they were trying to mirror what the experience of playing a D&D game is like. And to that end, there was a lot of exposition. Like every time they introduce a new character, there was like literally a flashback scene where they're explaining their backstory. And I thought it was annoying, but it's also, as you say, it's very true to how D&D is actually played. Like, at the beginning of the game, you have all your players. They all explain who their character is and what their backstory is. And then, I don't know, they were doing that anytime any, what you would call an NPC, any other of the non-main characters in the film. Anytime someone else would show up, they would then take 10 minutes to show their entire backstory. And I don't know.
Was there, like, a dungeon master sort of character?
No, there wasn't. There wasn't, like we were saying before, there wasn't any sort of, like, framing device where it's like, if this is actually people playing a game of D&D. Something like that might have also improved the movie for me. It would have made the story, like, it would have made some of this dialogue make a little more sense.
Yeah.
Like for example, if the dialogue is weak and feels very tropey, well, of course it does, because you cut to the, you know, middle school kids in their basement playing this game. Like, yeah, of course they're not gonna come up with, like, super creative dialogue. They're just kids playing a game. But they didn't do that.
I do this is probably not the best reference, but they do that in The Princess Bride as well, where you occasionally cut back to the kid complaining, Grandpa, it's like, she's not going to die. I know you're not going to kill the main character. It's like, this is just a dream sequence. And he's like, hey, be quiet. And then later on, when she wakes up, she's like, see, I told you she wasn't going to die. He's like, yeah, you're very smart. Now shut up. Let's keep going with the story. That was funny.
It really makes me think, like, if there was a cut of this film where, like, they don't change anything about the movie, they just, like, add a framing device like that, like, if that would have made it more enjoyable for me, and I kind of feel like it would have.
That's
maybe there was a version of the script where that was the intention, I don't know, and it just didn't make it into the film because it was a quite long movie, so maybe there was something like that and it got cut.
Yeah, I thought fourth wall humor is, like, popular nowadays. Or at least that's what people complain about, with there's too much of that in the Marvel movies and such. So, I don't know.
Anyway, I hope I didn't make all of our listeners who really liked the movie mad at me. I feel like I also would have enjoyed it more if... Because I when it was first announced, I assumed, like, oh, this is going to be dumb. This isn't going to be good. But then there were all these... So many people were saying, no, it's really good. It's funny. It made me cry at the end. So then I kind of got my expectations up too high. If I had gone in expecting it to be a bad movie, then maybe I would have also enjoyed it more. Then there's just so many factors that go into how one enjoys one's media, I suppose.
Yeah, it's weird to say that, but it is true. Like, if this had been released on Netflix, you would have come to it from a different viewpoint as opposed to it was released in theaters. Even if it had been the exact same movie. Yeah.
So tell me about the Mario movie. How did that go for you?
It was okay. It's a very bright and colorful kids movie. It's basically an action story. And that's it, really. For adults, it's more like, I guess, I wouldn't call it like nostalgia bait, but the most they'll get out of it is like various references to the games. Like, I thought it was a weird collection of games, too. like they spend like 15 to 20 minutes in the Donkey Kong Kingdom, and I don't think there's been a major Donkey Kong game in a while.
Huh.
But that's a big thing, is that Princess Peach and Mario go to the Donkey Kong Kingdom so they can get the Kong army to help them fight off Bowser, who is coming soon.
Yeah, were your kids like, who is Donkey Kong? Who is this giant monkey?
Donkey Kong is in Mario Kart, right? Donkey Kong is usually in, like, the crossover games.
I think so.
I think that's it, yeah.
I feel like there was, a new Donkey Kong Country game, but that was, like, 5 or 6 years ago. So, like, kids watching this movie probably wouldn't even be familiar with that, and I don't know that that was a huge hit to begin with.
You're right, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze.
There you go.
And that was a port... that was a Wii U game, which they ported to Switch. Okay, so they didn't have actually any new Donkey Kong games in the past 9 years. Okay.
There we go. Yeah, that originally was 2014, and then it was on the Switch in 2018. So even the re-release was, 5 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Gosh. Okay. Yeah. No, but, I mean, it's an okay movie. It'll keep kids entertained. That's basically it.
Was the Mario Kart section fun? I thought that sounded kind of interesting.
Yeah. That was right after they were on the... right after they get the Donkey Kongs to agree to help, they have to take Rainbow Road back home, and then the bad guys attack, and they have a big fight there on the it's just like Mario Kart. Basically, the characters are all fighting while going in go-karts at the same time.
Well, that's kind of that sounds kind of entertaining.
Yeah, that was one of the good sequences. I thought it was fine. Yeah.
Was Wart in there? Shy Guys? Anyone from Super Mario Brothers 2?
There were Shy Guys. They were... Let me see. I'm trying to figure out the best way to explain it, because it's pretty light on plot. I feel like that was a problem for Bowser, is, like, it felt like he was contractually obligated to be in, like, a third of the movie, but he's not doing anything for the third of the movie. So the movie starts with him getting the Power Star from the Penguins, and then he's going to fly to the Mushroom Kingdom and ask Princess Peach to marry him. And that's what he does for, like, the next hour, is just, he's doing nothing besides being on his airship, which is slowly traveling to the Mushroom Kingdom for the big finale. So even though he's there for the entire movie, it's like an hour of him not really doing much of anything or affecting the plot. Like, it's not specifically wanting to go after Mario. He's just mad that the princess is hanging out with another dude, and that's why he dislikes Mario, because he wants to marry the princess himself.
I think I heard that he has a musical number in the movie as well.
He does. They make him more of a joke villain, I guess, because he spends, like I said, half the movie just daydreaming about how he wants to marry the princess. And, like, he forces one of his minions to dress up like Princess Peach so he can pretend to propose and that sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah.
And meanwhile, Mario has the... I forget what other movies have done this story, but I'm sure there's tons of them where... he's just a guy in the normal world who feels like he's not so good and very unsuccessful, but he accidentally stumbles upon this, you know, Mushroom Kingdom world where he's less of a loser and goes back home and becomes more successful and now wins at life. Oh. That's sort of his character arc.
Yeah, so they do reestablish that he is a plumber in this movie, right?
Yeah, that's it. He's kind of a loser plumber, and his family members hate him. And it was like a weird first, like, 10 minutes, because it allegedly, you know, it takes place in the real world in Brooklyn, where Mario and Luigi are just struggling plumbers. And their family members hate them, and their only plumbing job goes badly because, like, this dog starts attacking them or whatever. I just thought it was kind of a weird opening sequence, because it didn't really feel like Super Mario, if that makes sense.
So I have two follow-up questions for this. I have two follow-up questions. One, their family? Do they have other family members in this film besides each other?
Yes, it's weird. Half of it is just an excuse to get that original Mario voice actor there, Chris, what do we say, Chris Martinet? Mm. So
Charles Martinet.
Charles, yeah. Martinet. So it's like, hey, what do you think, Cousin Fred? Do you like it? And he's like, hey, yippee! And he does the Mario voice and just says Mario catchphrases. So that's like half of it. And then the other half was Dad saying, I think you guys are losers and your plumbing business is never coming off of the ground. And Mario goes, gee, we mean thanks Mario's a lot, Dad. And then he just goes to his room and Dad's like, what's the matter? What'd I say?
Wait, I want that to be the whole movie. Mario Brothers' home life. Sure.
And that's just so at the end, when they save the day, Dad can come up and say, you know what? I always believed in you, sons. You guys are fantastic. And I, you know. Sort of like that storyline you were just talking about in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
Where the character fails to impress Dad in Act 1, so they can impress Dad in Act 5. And it feels like a huge success. Another weird thing in the first 10 minutes is they introduce like a rival plumber character, which makes no sense because Mario has like two rival characters. He has like the Wario and the Waluigi. I forget what this guy's name is. Something boring like Fred or whatever.
Wait, I think there is. I'm looking this up because I feel like there was, like, before the movie was coming out, there was this extremely obscure character from the Mario canon that was in it. I wonder if that's who this is. Let's see if I figure out who that was.
Well, they had him dressed like the character from Wreck-It Ralph. I feel like that's what it was, a joke. Yeah, well, there's just a handful of human characters at the very start, and one of them's just a mean rival who again, makes fun of them for being terrible plumbers. So at the very end, they can save this character and he can, you know, get his comeuppance for just being a jerk and laughing at them in public.
Yeah, it sounds right. I don't know. Should I see this movie at some point, or will I just be disappointed like I was with the D&D movie?
I don't know how you'd handle it. Have you seen a lot of the, I guess, kids' movies? It does at times feel like, it was just made by the people who made Minions.
There it is. Foreman Spike. That's the character I was trying to find. Spike. Is that someone that you
remember
from
is
the
movie? Is Spike the,
He's kind of wearing yellow. It looks like yellow and gray. He plays the former boss of Mario and Luigi. He first appears at Punch-Out Pizzeria, where he mocks the brothers after the first airing of their first commercial.
Yeah. There's that guy. That's a very obscure character. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So he's I think originally from. Yeah, here we go. He's originally from like the NES or maybe arcade game Wrecking Crew, which I guess is somehow falls into the Mario Brothers canon.
Really, it's just somebody in a plumber outfit who makes fun of them relentlessly. It could have been anybody, to be honest.
Yeah, sure.
I did not catch on the fact that this is some sort of character who was in a game in the 1980s. You can tell it's made by the people that made the Minions movies because I've noticed they have a tendency to have their characters act and look or move the same, if that makes sense. It's like Gru from Minions.
Right, like kind of similar facial expressions.
He's gonna, like, the most obvious is like the character who's the guy who moves around and jumps around all the time. Like, they had it with Dracula in the Hotel Transylvania. They had it from Gru from Minions. And then when they did the Grinch was doing the exact same thing, jumping all over the place and being over the top. And we get that here. I think Donkey Kong is the one who is given that role of over the top, jumping around. He is also a rival character, come to think of it. This movie might have too many rival characters whose main role is just to be mean to the Mario brothers.
I guess that's why they couldn't fit Wario and Waluigi in.
Yeah, we don't need, like, a six person to make our heroes feel bad about themselves. But also, yeah, the way Princess Peach moves is different from the way she moves in the video games, and I found that vaguely distracting. I think it's because in Super Mario, the new one, Odyssey, like, we primarily only see her and Bowser during cutscenes, yeah. We see a bit more Bowser outside of cutscenes, because you get to play as Bowser for, like, a half hour towards the end of the game, and that's actually a pretty awesome segment. But definitely with the princess, you only see her in cutscenes, and so her animation in this movie is not the way they animated the cutscenes, so it's like, she's not moving the way I've seen her move.
I'm just picturing her jumping straight up into the air and then floating for several feet. Is that not how it happens?
There is one scene where she kind of does the floating down, so yeah, yeah.
Hey, there we go. Oh, this movie sounds great.
Yeah, it's when she's showing off how awesome she is. Yeah.
I think I have heard people describe the movie as being like there's not much of a plot. It's just sort of jumping from one reference that millennials will love to the next reference that millennials will love. Just a bunch of references kind of strung together in a film-like form.
Yeah, that's sort of what I felt like, too. It's like we're spending 10 minutes in this game and then 10 minutes in this game, and Luigi spends 10 minutes in Luigi's Mansion, sort of, where he gets captured. Nice. And then, like I said, they spend like 20 minutes in the Donkey Kong Kingdom, which is followed by a 10-minute segment of driving home through Mario Kart. I feel like that plays to the movie's strength, though.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're always going to a bunch of different games, a bunch of different, like, imaginative, fancy worlds to look at. At least I think that's how it would be described. I'm surprised they didn't have, like, a tie-in game to come out with the movie.
Huh, yeah. I mean, there hasn't really been a Mario game since Odyssey, right? It's been a little bit now.
Yeah, so I feel like...
I mean, there's probably been, like, Mario Kart and probably some sports games, but there hasn't been, like, a new main Mario game in a bit.
Yeah. And that just makes the game, I mean, that makes the movie, I don't know why I keep calling it a game, but it makes the movie feel a little different than if it had been based on one particular game. Since they don't have one particular game to base it on, they kind of try to go for all of them. And at the very least, that keeps things moving if you're trying to slam, like, seven different games into one particular movie.
Was there, like, a Mario Party scene, too, where they're, like, sitting around playing a board game or something?
No, that made me sad.
Oh, that's the one they skipped. Dang.
There were Yoshis at one point, so, I mean, that off of our reference list, I suppose.
Did we go to Yoshi's Island?
I think that was one of the things where they were having... What do you call it? A montage of them going through different areas on their way to the Donkey Kong forest jungle.
Mm.
And so one of them was jumping across toadstools. And then one of them was going through the Yoshi area, I think.
That's fun. So did you see it with your kids? And if so, did they enjoy it?
Just the youngest one, and she really enjoyed it. Do not know how the teenager would enjoy it or not.
Oh, the other thing I was going to ask, since there's so much stuff about Mario's family and all, do they canonically establish that his last name is Mario like they do in the original 1990 whatever movie?
No. Nope.
No. Okay.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think they just referred to the characters as, like, Mom, Dad, Uncle Tony. I think that's it.
Gotcha.
And the characters, like, only get named once anyway. So it's one of those things, like, you have to remember what the character's name is or not. It's like, there's, like, seven characters sitting around this dinner table. I can't remember them all.
Oh, they should have been playing Mario Party at the table. Gosh darn it.
No, he hides in his room and plays Ice Climber, so that's a thing.
Oh, that's... Wow! That's a deep cut.
Yeah,
that's fun.
That's what he did after Dad insulted him. He goes in his room and hides and plays Ice Climbers, and then Luigi walks into the room.
Is he playing like?
He's playing by himself, and Luigi walks into the room. Yeah, he's playing on Nintendo. Yeah.
Oh, that's weird. Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. Luigi walks into the room and comforts him, which is, again, like, predictably leading to... Luigi is going to be captured and spend most of the movie needing to be saved by Mario. That way they can be reunited at the end. We need to establish two brothers really like each other. So there's a reason for Mario to try to save his brother.
Oh. Should we do listener questions before we wrap up? We have one that's very on topic for today's discussion. Question from Joe Reviewer on the Discord. Joe asks, in the wake of the video game movie renaissance, which of your games would you want to turn into a blockbuster film? And my answer is, and always has been, Cat President, make me a Cat President anime, please. TV show, feature-length film, I do not care. Although, now that I think about it, a feature-length film would be awesome, because then maybe we could win an Oscar. I think we deserve that. What are your thoughts?
I think Pizza Delivery Boy has saved the world. I don't know how long it would be, but how long does it take people to play the game? I guess it's long enough. Wouldn't have to change too much, I think.
I can see that working, yeah. The plot twist with that would play well for a movie script, movie audience.
I guess there is like a video game renaissance. Yeah, huh. I was trying to see which ones. I guess they had the Mario movie and the two Sonic movies, and yeah.
Yeah. And the Sonic movies, I think, were, you know, reasonably well regarded, too.
I don't know. I didn't see it, but maybe that's because I've seen too many movies with that general plot, where, like, the character suddenly finds themselves in the real world. And then, I don't know, that was the plot of the Smurfs movie, the Rocky and Bullwinkle movie. I'm sure there are plenty of other movies as well. Chipmunks movie, I think.
Oh, I still have to watch that. I haven't watched that yet.
Oh, you've got to watch all four of the Chipmunks movies.
I can definitely see the Pizza Boy film. It's got a good storyline. Plot progression, I don't know, jokes, etc. All right, you think we should wrap up now?
I guess we didn't talk about any of the stuff we've done past month.
We've done it, Michael. We've finally done an entire podcast where we don't talk about game development at all.
Finally?
Only took us 75 episodes or whatever. Yeah. All right. I think that about does it for this month's episode. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Paul M. Franzen, and Michael is at Arglefumpf, spelled exactly as it sounds. You can check out our games on PC and console, or just visit orock.com for the complete library. Our theme song is by Fifth Avenue. You can check them out on SoundCloud. And finally, if you have any questions about game development or our game specifically, we'd love to hear them. Post them in the Discord or email them to podcast@orock.com. Is there anything that you would like to add, Michael?
Let us know what games you think would make great movies.
Oh, you mean like our games or just games in general?
Just games in general, I suppose.
Bye, everybody.
Okay, bye. The story will be told. Go!
So what happens if you've eaten part of an expanded cheeseburger then, and like it's already like starting to break down in your digestive system?